You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And I'm Mary Walter here with Vince Colonies.
Well, good morning. Happy to have joining us right now Chef Jeff Tracy. You know him from all over the D.C. area, all of his nice restaurants. Chef Jeff, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning to you guys.
Nice to talk to you because you are in the midst of a free speech battle, so there's a lot of people who are rooting for you right now because in the Commonwealth, apparently the law is that you're not allowed to creatively advertise a happy hour at all. You basically can't use the word happy hour. You can't offer two-for-one drinks. You can't do all these things. And you are saying, and you're now suing the Commonwealth to say, hey, this is hurting my business and this needs to be fixed.
Absolutely. Well, you can use the word happy hour, you can use the word drink specials, but you can use no other words to describe what all of us know as a happy hour. But the thing that's even more ridiculous is you can't tell your customers what the prices are until they walk through the doors. So in D.C., I can tell people what the prices are in my advertising. In Maryland, I can tell people what the prices are in my advertising. But in the great state of Virginia, I can't tell people what the prices are, and it just doesn't make any sense.
In the restrictions, it says something. You can't sell two or more drinks for one price, so you can't have a two-for-one deal or a three-for-one deal. Could you have a oversized container deal where you sell it in a growler, for instance? You're like, actually, this drink comes in a container that's three times as big. How about that?
I actually am well known for my super mugs, which are 33.8 ounces.
Yes, you are. I've had them.
And you may have partaken in one of those.
I have.
She's doing it right now.
So those are kind of semantics and ways around some things.
Yes.
But the First Amendment is a big issue. Mm-hmm. And for me to not be able to say a glass of wine is $5 in an advertisement or a newsletter or a tweet, that's kind of ridiculous.
Now, you've got the support of the Pacific Legal Foundation here, this lawsuit being filed on your behalf. Before you got to the lawsuit point, did you ever have conversations with lawmakers or legislators about this? And did anyone give you a sound rationale for why you shouldn't be allowed to express these things?
Absolutely. In 2014, I was the chairman of the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington, and we worked very diligently with lots of lawmakers who were great, and we actually chipped away at some of these, you know, pre-prohibition era, you know, rules and regulations. And we made good strides. Problem is, there's just we almost got to the end zone, but we didn't get all the way there. And so the Pacific League Foundation came to me and said, "Hey, we can help you get all the way there." And that's what we're doing now.
But so these are leftover laws from like the 30s from Prohibition. Is that what this is? And they're just because sometimes you have these wacky laws on the books.
There's not a single legislator out there in Virginia right now who's heavily vested in this law. There's nobody out there. And so the lawsuit will be incentive for them to just clean up the books.
Yeah, I mean, you must have a good sense that this will work, though. Because this feels like about as clear of a violation as the First Amendment as it gets. I mean, you should be – this is nothing offensive about this. There's nothing – it's not hate speech or whatever you want to say. This is literally just advertising what your drink deal is.
Correct. And you know, while maintaining full responsibility for what we do as servers of alcohol, because mm-hmm. there is great responsibility in that, and I take that responsibility seriously – but I take it seriously in D.C. and I tell people the prices. I take it seriously in Maryland and I tell people the prices. And I'll take it seriously in Virginia and I want to tell people the prices.
Have you heard from other restaurateurs, other people who own businesses like yours who want to join in on this?
There's not a single person out there that has come to me that has disagreed with me on this fact.
Mm-hmm. But there are no other restaurateurs who are joining with you in this lawsuit.
I'm the only plaintiff, but I'm essentially a spokesman for all restaurateurs in the state of Virginia and all the customers of restaurants.
And this only applies to alcoholic beverages, in which that the advertising is so restricted.
Right. I can tell you that the price of my hamburgers at happy hour, the price of a chicken wing or a truffle Parmesan popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary has a very specific question about one of your appetizers, I think.
I do. I want to know how you make the crispy Brussels sprouts because I could go over – I could walk over there right now and just eat a bowl of them.
They're really good, aren't they?
They are. So one of these days, I want to know how you do it.
You come to – I mean, you guys are right over by Leah, so – You guys, let me know when you're coming, and I'll bring you into the kitchen. You, me, Chef Santos, we'll cook them up for you.
All right, because I can walk there.
You can see it step by step.
Oh, good, because I can walk there. So that is that I'm there a lot. I love that.
Oh, good. I'm glad we arranged that appointment.
Please tell me that they're somewhat healthy.
Oh, they're great.
Okay,
they're great.
All right.
Fantastic. I'll tell you whatever you want.
Crispy, whatever you want. Crispy Brussels sprouts. See, that was allowed. That's allowed under the law.
Exactly.
Tell me about your chances here. This is going before what court, and how quickly could this be resolved, do you think?
So this goes to the United States District Court, Eastern District of Virginia, Alexander Division. They have 60 days. The Virginia Alcohol Beverage Control Authority has about 60 days to respond. I really do think they'll see the light in this. You know, Virginia is a great, great place to do business. It really is. And, you know, I just think that getting rid of these silly, utterly ridiculous old laws off the books just makes it a better place to do business. And I think Virginia will see the light quickly here, to come to an agreement and use this lawsuit as an opportunity to get rid of this silly law.
So you've got your Chef Jeff's Tyson's. Is that the one location, or do you have other locations in Virginia?
So I have only one location that does happy hour in Virginia. I have one other location at the airport, Terminal C at United Airlines. So if you're flying out there, you can go there. But we don't do happy hours at the airport. There's no need to do happy hours. It's always happy hour.
It's a captive audience.
This is a weird thing about airports. That it's the only place you're allowed to day drink, and nobody looks at you with skeptical eyes.
Yes.
Nobody looks at you with anything. It's unbelievable. Great in the airport. It's a happy place.
Very true. Well, Chef Jeff, thank you very much. Good luck in your fight. Again, this seems like an easy one. Who's against this? Come on now.
Yeah.
Who's against it?
And I'm taking you up on your offer. I'm going to learn how to make those Brussels sprouts.
There Absolutely. Please do. Let me know.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, and happy Easter to you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us now, Raymond Arroyo. He is the news director and lead anchor of EWT, also a New York Times best-selling author. Raymond, good morning. Welcome to Mornings on the Mall.
Hi, Mary. Delighted to be with you on this Good Friday.
Yes, it is Good Friday. A blessed Good Friday to you. I wanted to talk to you. We were having this discussion this morning about whether more things seem open on Good Friday than they did in years past as time goes on. It seems as if Good Friday doesn't get the recognition anymore that it should. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, it used to be a solemn day where vendors and restaurateurs and others would close up shop, particularly in the afternoon. You know, if they were open, they were only open half day. That has, as we've seen, I think, faith dilute, that has gone by the wayside. Now, I live in New Orleans, you know, and I'm there most of the year. We have a very different, you know, pattern there, where many of the old restaurants, they only have fish on the menu on these days, and you still do have a lot of places closed on Friday. But, you know, that's kind of an organic expression of belief. And I think in a very multicultural, diverse place like Washington, you just don't get that anymore. Now it looks more like it's Memorial Day. You've got sales and people trying to drive people into the stores rather than away from them.
Yeah, well, do you see Good Friday sales?
One more time?
I don't necessarily see Good Friday sales, things like that. I just don't see, any acknowledgement of it, period.
Well, I saw a few things. In fact, some people have sent me some articles and things they've seen in local papers across the country where they're advertising it. Hey, it's Good Friday. It's Easter weekend. Come shop. You know, where people, they're trying to turn it into another day of commerce, which I guess is okay, but for those of us who see this as sort of the apex of their faith, and, you know, it is a holy day.
Yeah.
And I think we've forgotten that, and so much of American culture gets pulled into a secular direction, you see that dwindling, and that's a shame.
Yeah, and it's not just
for our children and terrible for our culture.
And of course, it's not just American culture. I just looked it up. The UK paper's advertising that Good Friday is the new Black Friday, up to 70% off at various retailers.
That's terrible.
Yeah, bad trend. Amazing stuff. So let me, Raymond Arroyo, I want to ask you about this because you're well equipped to answer this question. Yesterday, so much was made of the Pope's comments and this notion that he said that hell did not exist in an interview with a 93-year-old Italian journalist who didn't actually record the interview. The Vatican pushing back on that, saying, no, that's not what he said, and hell, by the way, does indeed exist. Can you sort us through what happened?
Yeah, well, I wish they'd said what you said there, Vince. You should be Vatican spokesman. You might be clearer than what we're hearing, the non-denial denials from the Vatican. Look, the Pope has met repeatedly with this, he's a crazy old guy. He's a 93-year-old founder of La Repubblica in Italy, a guy named Scalfari. The Pope has sat with him multiple times. The man does not take notes, nor does he record conversations, and he's 93 years old. And then he recreates these conversations in print when he gets home. This is the second time he's reported that the Pope has said hell does not exist. The first time was in 2015, just for the record. The Vatican came out the day this broke, because it was headlines around the world, the Pope denies hell, and they said this doesn't represent the exact recreation of the Pope's words. Okay? They're saying that this is not a credible source and that he's been misquoted. They do not and did not deny the content of what he said, nor did they say, and naturally the Pope reaffirms the teaching on hell that the Church has always maintained. That is curious that they have not done that. So I have two questions over my head this morning. One, why does the Pope keep meeting with Scalfari? An atheist who really doesn't have a grasp of faith that, you know, any other journalist might be equipped to have? And B, why wasn't the Vatican more deliberate in its denial? And why didn't they clear this up and put it to bed? To my mind, they haven't.
Yeah, well, you sense the nuance that I didn't hear, and that's that the Vatican was not being anywhere near as clear as I kind of assumed they would be, because it seems like to me the existence of hell is about as fundamental a question to the Catholic Church as anything else, and it'd be a layup to basically respond, well, yeah, I mean, these are thousands of years in the making. We've been really clear on this throughout.
Well, Vince, not only Catholics, you should have seen the evangelical mail and emails I got yesterday and calls. I had a major evangelical pastor call me saying, what the hell is going on? No pun intended. This rattles the entirety of Christendom when the Pope muses on something like this or is misquoted in this way. So to my mind, it's incumbent on the Vatican to clear this up and let us know what he really believes. Look, the Pope has spoken continuously about the presence of Satan, his pull on all of us, how, you know, Satan is real. So this does not square with his other comments. At the same time, he speaks very freely with Scalfari, and he says some wacky things around the edges that are concerning. But look, if hell doesn't exist, Good Friday and Jesus' whole mission really was in vain. What did he conquer? What did he overcome? What did he deliver us from, if not hell?
Well, doesn't the Apostles' Creed say that he descended into hell? I mean, it's kind of clearly, it's in there. I mean, this is pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. No, it's foundational. Yeah. It's foundational.
I wanted to discuss something that I learned just about recently, that there is a Toronto-based ice cream chain called Sweet Jesus. And they are now expanding into the United States. I believe they have plans for a shop at Mall of America. And there is a lot of backlash because of this. There's a petition on change.org that says that the shop's name is a mockery of taking the Lord's name in vain. It's highly offensive towards Christians. Is Canada more secular than the United States? And that's why you're seeing the backlash here? And they haven't even opened. It's just they're going to.
Well, they're in Baltimore. They apparently have one store in Baltimore, and they're opening at the Mall of America. And I didn't, like you, I didn't know about this chain. I didn't hear anything about it. And I, you know, a chain named Sweet Jesus, is probably not something I'd frequent. But as I've looked into this, made some calls, it is really creepy. In their logo, the S in Sweet, is a lightning bolt, okay, which I now am told by people who are launching a boycott. Bill Donahue with the Catholic League, a lot of evangelical groups and mom groups have launched this nationwide boycott of this chain because they see their satanic imagery imagery that's used by the Church of Satan and people who are Satan worshippers. There's an upside-down cross in the logo, and this lightning bolt, unbeknownst to me, apparently represents Satan's fall from the heavens. And it's the same S that was used by the SS, by the Gestapo, the Hitler's Gestapo, that double S. It was two lightning bolts. They use that in their iconography, which is problematic. But it doesn't stop there. Their advertising campaigns are kind of very creepy, almost possessed-looking kids ice cream all over their mouths. They almost look like cannibals. They twist biblical quotes, and I can't. Some of it I don't even want to go into detail. You're a family show, but the ads are very troubling. And when I dug into this and called the headquarters the other day, they said that Sweet Jesus, it was an expression used by people who tasted this ice cream for the first time. And my retort to them was, well, thank goodness they didn't say Holy Muhammad, because I doubt if you'd be able to open that chain anywhere.
Exactly. Yes. Awesome. Allah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Raymond Arroyo, thank you so much for joining us. Have a blessed Good Friday and a happy Easter as well.
A delight being with you both. Thank you. Have a great Easter.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. More of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Live here on what is clearly a historic day in Washington, D.C. You know the facts by now, but I'll tell you, 1 million people marching down Pennsylvania Avenue.
What do your t-shirts say?
Never again.
Never again.
Never again.
And on
Never
the back,
again.
We stand together.
The teenagers are teaching the adults, and hopefully we are all listening and absorbing and learning.
1 million people. Did I hear that right?
I heard it was 5 million.
Wait, let me rub my ear. That's my ear. I'm rubbing it out. That doesn't sound right at all. I thought it was like closer to 200,000. For more on this, let's go to Joe Concha, media reporter for The Hill. Joe, what this media coverage this weekend of the March for Our Lives was, it seemed like they kind of liked all these protesters and their cause.
Well, look, I think when you have reporters and pundits that are agreeing completely and totally with the narrative, then as humans, it's hard to hide their emotions, and we certainly saw that. A couple things on the numbers. First, we heard that it was 800,000 in Washington. Then it was lowered to 400,000. Some estimates are lower than that. Then the new number came out that it was, well, across the country in other cities, it eclipsed more than 1 million marchers. So that's why I think the numbers are a little confusing.
As I recall, I believe you're not allowed to do that math, because remember when Trump, the president of the United States, said around the world they had a record viewership, they were tut-tutted by the press. You're not allowed to lump in people who are outside of Washington, D.C. That doesn't count.
I always thought that was such a bad rap on Sean Spicer, because I understood what he was saying.
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, with streaming capabilities that didn't exist 8 years ago, so you could watch on your phones and you could watch internationally, but maybe you didn't have feeds before, that if you add up all those numbers, and it was impossible to completely calculate, maybe more people did watch it, and the press was so dishonest with it. They said, but look at the pictures. Not as many people attended this inauguration. Well, yeah, President Obama was an historic figure. Of course that had more people.
Yeah.
But they purposely left out what Spicer was trying to say, and then he never recovered, quite frankly. It was an uphill battle since then. But overall, as far as the marches, you know, some Parkland students were shut out who didn't perform or conform, I should say, to the desired narrative, right? Who thought there should be more focus on law enforcement failures, or maybe thought that we should concentrate on other solutions besides gun control. I think this is a very complex problem, having 25 fatal school shootings in elementary and high schools since Columbine, right? And it may be gun control to a certain extent, more measures is one part of that solution, but there are other ones as well. Great ideas that I've heard, like, hey, if you're not on patrol, you're a police officer, technology allows now, if you're going to do paperwork, just position these police officers when they're not out on the road in schools. and then limit the entry points to two places. And this way, you're not really, it's not really going to cost you anything. And maybe you don't completely stop the problem, because that's always the argument against. That won't stop things completely, but you help manage it a little bit more. It's like terrorism. Maybe you can't stop these things completely, but you manage it. And then there's other things as well, like, is law enforcement truly prepared to engage? In Maryland 2 weeks ago, right, at Graham Mills, there was a resource officer there that stopped the shooter. Okay, that's good. But in Broward County, in Parkland, you had four guys there who wouldn't engage and go into the schools. So we have to make sure that they're all properly trained. Overall, all those things could have been presented at this march for a comprehensive solution. Instead, we only got one, as if that will completely solve the problem. Right.
And the media is complicit in this, obviously, as you know. Mm-hmm. But so here's the thing. It's getting worse and worse. I think this idea of media becoming propaganda, it has become more and more evident, at least it's out of the closet now. What can someone who doesn't work in the media, like we do, we're inundated with this every day. How does someone who's not inundated with this actually find the truth?
Oh, that's a very good question. I would just say it's like dating. Find somebody that you trust, or an organization that you trust, and go with that best you can. The good news is, if you're worried, like, well, yes, the media has become propaganda, all it's done, it's like, you know, on CNN, Stormy Daniels has been the new Malaysian Airjet, you know, the missing plane, where that's
exactly
all they're exclusively covering, instead of missing some big stories or just pushing it to their digital side. That's always the excuse. We covered it, but it was on our digital side. Okay, well, people are still watching the network, clearly. But I look at Trump's poll numbers very closely, and I don't cherry-pick polls. I go with the RCP, which is the Real Clear Politics Average. And he's been trending upward for months now. And you say, well, how could that be with all the overwhelming coverage around Russia and chaos in the White House and Stormy Daniels? How is he going up? And I think the boomerang effect is happening with the Stormy Daniels, not to the extent that it did with Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, where he ended up with a 65% approval rating when he left office. But it seems like people are seeing this and saying, guys, there's not really a story here. I mean, we didn't elect a choir boy. We elected a businessman from New York, from Queens, who loves to be in the public eye. I've grown up in New York, and I've lived here for 40 years. And I can tell you, the New York Post and the Daily News, 80s, 90s, and last decade, there would be an item on Donald Trump's personal life seemingly every other day. So people knew what they were getting when they voted for him. And for him to have sex with a porn star just isn't quite newsworthy. You could say, well, yeah, but she was threatened. Okay, do we know she was threatened? Because she didn't go to the police afterwards when a man approached her in a Las Vegas parking lot and said to her daughter, it would be a shame that something happened to her mother. If that was my wife, she would have ran to the police in 2 seconds. So that doesn't help her story. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it doesn't help her story. And then you have her lawyer out there teasing discs on Twitter saying, here's a smoking gun, basically. And then he has 22 million people watching 60 Minutes, and he doesn't present it. Says, oh, we're saving it for another time. Why? You had a great platform. So I think people see all that, and Americans are smart enough to say, you know what, I just don't think, unless you present something else, there's anything here, and I almost feel sympathy for the president.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned how CNN covered the Malaysian airliner. It turns out Stormy Daniels' career was a black hole until all of this coverage. Like, she's, like, all of a sudden taking off. Like, you can subscribe online. You can see her naked at any point now. And wait a second. What is this all about? Because it seems like she's just pursuing a bunch of sustainers in order to make her career flourish, which it is now. And she's getting a huge in-kind assist from the press, which is, it's just willing to run on even thin evidence. I mean, look, Anderson Cooper did a good job of pointing out the following thing. She has three times signed public documents declaring that none of this happened with Donald Trump. Correct. And yet now their insistence is, well, that was a lie. She was lying then, but now she's telling the truth.
Right. It's whatever you want it to be, right? And look, I thought Anderson Cooper, as far as taking on Michael Avenatti, the lawyer, and bringing up the fact, because a lot of people didn't know this before, that he's worked for 150 Democratic campaigns. He was an operative. He worked for Rahm Emanuel. So, yes, there is a political aspect to this. So maybe as far as agenda, that's something that should be talked about as well. But I just wonder where the story now goes from here. What do we do? But either way, this is being treated again as a huge story, but it's not going to move the needle one bit, if anything.
Well,
somehow Trump benefits a little bit because people see how ridiculous.
Actually, this sounds a lot like the Russia investigation in this way. Remember, the allegation was first collusion, and then it moved to obstruction of justice, which is like, it's a process crime. It's the same thing as happening with the Stormy Daniels story. It arises as a story of an affair, maybe something that involves sexual assault. We don't know. And then we find out, actually, it was consensual. Now it's moving to a process crime. Did they wrongfully use campaign money to silence her? This moves in whatever direction it needs to in order for the president to look bad.
The pivot to the negative. It's a term that I've come to embrace in the last year or so as far as watching media coverage of this. And once again, you mentioned consensual. You're right. And what's baked into the cake here is the fact that you could go back to FDR and then to Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson and Bush 41 and Clinton, and they all either had affairs that were completely and totally proven and that they've admitted to, or they were accused, and there's a lot of circumstantial evidence around it. Either way, I think the American people have accepted the fact that powerful people, particularly presidents, have affairs. In Bill Clinton's case, apparently he's been accused of non-consensual affairs, mm-hmm. and that was ignored, obviously, because of the D next to his name. What can we say? I mean, Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and as long as he keeps moving ahead with an agenda and gets things done, all the noise around him I'm seeing isn't having the effect that I think the media would like it to have.
Well, Joe, the D after the name usually means disqualified from scrutiny. Thank you, Joe.
Well played, Vince.
Joe Concha.
Publishing with those sort of analogies. I love it.
Joe Concha, thank you. As always, really appreciate it, sir.
All right, guys. Thanks.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
We choose real change. Where they embrace an extremism of complacency, we embrace an extremism of love. Where they believe in the absolutism of an amendment, we believe in the absolutism of human life.
That was Matthew Post. He's a student member of the Montgomery County School Board, and he was speaking that right there at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Matthew joins us now. Matthew, good morning. Welcome to Mornings on the Mall.
Good to be here.
Matt, you talked a little bit in your speech there, the part we just played, about the Second Amendment. Do you believe the Second Amendment needs to be changed?
No. I believe in the Second Amendment. I just think we need some common sense gun control to make sure that people stop dying.
So what are your prescriptions then? What would you like to see changed?
Well, we have a very specific list of demands. We want to see a ban on semi-automatic rifles and high-capacity magazines. We want to raise the age to buy a gun from 18 to 21. And we want to create real investments in our mental health supports as a country.
Right. So when you look at sort of the gun statistics, we talked to a lot of gun rights advocates, you look at the gun statistics, the disproportionate number of people are killed by handguns, not by rifles. A very, very small percentage of people are killed by semi-automatic rifles. But yet it seems like all the attention is here. Why not expand it to pistols and other things like that are actually killing so many people?
Well, I think things like improved background checks and raising the age to buy a gun will help with those deaths as well.
Yeah.
But look, you have to start somewhere. And just because we can't prevent all gun deaths doesn't mean we should stop trying to prevent some of them.
Right, but starting there, that's the issue. It seems because I think a lot of people look at that and they're like, well, if you're going to start there, where are you going to end up? If the point is to start with banning semi-automatic rifles, inevitably it heads to banning pistols. I mean, that's the logical conclusion to this because, first of all, pistols, again, just in terms of how they're used in crime, way more deadly in the United States than anybody using a semi-automatic rifle.
Well, look, I disagree. I don't think it's a slippery slope. I think that's fallacy.
Sure.
And look, I'm
not at all.
I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stop kids from dying.
Okay. Well, there are things that kill children in far greater numbers than guns, and I don't see you dealing with that. But the facts are that you are statistically seven times safer in school now than you were in the 1990s. School shootings are down seven times since the 1991-92 school year. The odds of getting struck by lightning are higher, as well as the odds of you being killed on your way to or from school. You're more likely to die on your way to or from school than you are in school. So the gun violence in schools actually has been going down.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. We should not be only focused on school shootings. We should be focused on shootings.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me just ask a quick question. You said on your list of demands was a ban on semi-automatic rifles, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know that the only kind of rifles that can be legally owned now are semi-automatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want all long guns banned then? Well, that's what it is, because automatic weapons, fully automatic rifles, are banned. That they've been banned for a while. So that leaves only semi-automatic long guns available to the public, just like handguns are semi-automatic. So you want to ban long guns totally. And I think that's to Vince's point. Well, then you're going to want to ban semi-automatic handguns then, too. I mean, why do you want to ban all long rifles? They're harder to conceal than handguns.
Look, we need to start somewhere. I don't buy into the slippery slope argument that once you do something to prevent kids from dying, you know, you're going to have to do everything under the sun.
Well, why
long
guns?
We have to take baby steps in order to make sure that crazy people cannot have access to weapons that can kill 17 people in 6.5
Agreed. Matt, actually, you know, you mentioned keeping kids from dying, and I think something that seems to be lost in all of this is that the people were advocating that we arm citizens intend to do that very thing. And in fact, look back at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and let me just look at the litany of errors that went into this. A deputy standing outside as kids are slaughtered. The FBI failing to follow up on multiple tips. The Broward County Sheriff's Office, 23 visits to Nicholas Cruz's home, and they also noted his mental illness. School officials considered involuntarily committing him under Florida's Baker Act, but failed. And by the way, as you know, if you adjudicate at the federal level, if you're adjudicated mentally ill, your guns can be taken. These are all real laws that really exist. And then, meanwhile, in your state of Maryland, last week we saw that Great Mills High School, there was an officer with a gun who fired back and may very well have short-circuited that shooting from becoming much more extreme. Doesn't it seem that having a gun to return fire would be an important way to actually protect our children?
Sure. Trained law enforcement officials, I think, should have guns.
But we had a trained law enforcement official who had a gun and failed to do his job.
I guess my question for you is You want to have the government do more, specifically take guns. But the government failed so many times in the jobs it had in keeping these kids safe, and yet none of the focus is there. Why?
I think there's disappointment in the missteps, certainly.
But why is it about seizing guns rather than fixing the problems that would have actually prevented Marjorie Stoneman Douglas from happening?
Well, I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And also, I don't think anyone's talking about seizing guns. No one's trying to take your guns away.
You just did.
Matt,
that was your point. Is that one of your demands is that these guns be taken?
No, I did not say that. I said we should ban the sale of them. We should stop selling them.
So no more. So no more gun sales than what we currently have.
Sorry, what?
Go ahead, Matt.
No more gun sales then.
Banning the sale of semi-automatic rifles. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Well, that to me is it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it's harder to conceal a long gun than it is a handgun. So the theory, the reason why we allow people under the age of 21 to buy long guns and not handguns is because they're harder to conceal. So you can't just, you know, hide it under your coat and bring it into a school. So there's a little bit of a disconnect for me there. But okay.
I mean, that clearly didn't stop this guy. The problem is not concealing. If you can just walk into a place with a gun in a bag or case and then open it up,
funny how criminals don't follow those laws.
The problem, as I said, the problem wasn't the gun. It was the government's failures, yeah. Many of them, that led up to that. Matt, I really appreciate your game for coming on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Good for you. You held your own.
We'll chat with you again soon.
All right, sounds good.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm going down south, I'm going to have myself time.
All right, so South Park has had a weird place in American culture for many years. It's, you know, constantly over the decades been decried as offensive, and nowadays it seems like it pales in comparison to literally everything else, but it's still out there. And one of the turns that it's taken in recent years is that it's been very anti-political correctness. and actually in a hilarious way. The last few seasons have all been attacking social justice warriors, mocking like overt political correctness, and it's actually been pretty clever. And I know I have a bunch of Republican friends who've really enjoyed the last few seasons of South Park because it's at its core, it's fundamentally different than literally everything else on television because it's willing to call out sort of liberal nonsense when it runs way too far, and that's where South Park has been. So it's been interesting to hear. Now, the guys who created South Park, Matt Stone and Trey Parker, apparently claimed recently that they are actually Republican, which is unusual. In Hollywood, if you're a Republican, typically you keep it to yourself.
You're in the closet.
You don't express that. That's right. You keep that opinion locked up. You maybe consider telling your parents. You try and figure out if they can handle it, you know, and see if they won't disown you. Yeah, there's a lot that's involved with unpacking them. They were at an event recently for Norman Lear's organization, the People for the American Way, accepting the People for the American Way Foundation, and they accepted a Freedom Award. Now, the foundation itself is like a pretty left-wing, but they asked radio host Larry Elder to present the award. Matt Stone and Trey Parker did, and he tweeted about this. Larry Elder did. He said, "Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park asked me to introduce them when they received this Freedom Award from Norman Lear's organization. After they graciously accepted, they said on stage, 'We're Republicans.' The room was then filled with nervous laughter." And they repeated, "No, seriously, we're Republicans." Pretty, first of all, ballsy, but also hilarious. And I don't know, I don't watch it with regularity, but every so often somebody will regale me. You have to watch the last episode of South Park. I'll do it, and I will often be rewarded with something totally different than what the rest of the press is doing.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM, WMAL.